Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And this hour, we're going to talk about our salaries. Carrie Spivak of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote a fascinating piece on June 15. State's 10 best executives saw pay growth of 31% on average in 2012. Pay for the typical worker, he writes in this article, in the state increased 2.37%. The bottom line, the top 10 Wisconsin CEOs made on average 251 times more than average Joe did last year. And we'll talk about what that means. The second part of our program today, we saw an interesting article, and we'd like for your response on this. Your state's highest paid public employee, what would that person be? And if you guessed a coach of some kind, you are right in almost every state in the country. But the amount of money these people are making is just unbelievable. And they're coaches. What do you think about that? Well, we'll be welcoming phone calls. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Carrie Spivak is with us to talk about his article concerning those who are CEOs and everybody else and why that is the case. And if you need to pay those kinds of high salaries to attract CEOs, if it's hard to get somebody who can run a company, if you're not paying a huge amount of money, and it is a huge amount of money, our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show for you to leave messages there. Carrie, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. How are you doing there?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing fine.
So you start the article, the richest of the rich are getting richer, and the rest of us, we're mostly just limping along. The rich among the rich are getting very rich, aren't they?
Yeah, it's the old story, those who have the most get the most. They are the guys who, for the most part, are running some of the largest public corporations here. But, yeah, there's a, like we point out in the story, there's even a wage gap between CEOs. The top 10 CEOs are making, I think, about four times more all the rest of the CEOs in the state. So, yeah, those at the top seem to get better. And, yeah, for the state, what we say was 2.3% or so is the average increase. So it's a large wage gap, and it's only getting larger.
So what's the average CEO salary, and what would the average worker's salary in the state of Wisconsin be, Carrie?
Right now, the average CEO salary, I believe, is a little bit over $4 million. And the average worker in the state is about $41,000. So you have it worked out to a wage gap of 100-1 between the CEOs as a group and all workers.
And when you talk to various economists about this, those who run conservative think tanks would say you need to have that kind of money to attract CEOs. People from other political persuasions would say, wouldn't it be nice if you had a gap that wasn't nearly as large?
Yeah, that's true. In fact, one of the people we quote is a recently retired money manager, Hugh Dennison, who is not a flaming liberal. I mean, he's basically a card-carrying Republican is the way he'll describe himself. But even people like him will say, hey, look, you know, this gap is too great. Wouldn't it be nice if you were only paying 25-1? Now, one thing to remember when you're talking to a money manager, many of whom are doing quite well also, they're representing the investors and the shareholders, and a lot of times the shareholders are beginning to say, hey, this is enough already. And back in 2010, when they passed the Dodd-Frank Act, Congress ordered that all corporations, all public corporations, start listing the median pay of all their workers so you could see what is the gap between your CEO and the worker bees in your corporation. That law has yet to be implemented because there's a lot of foot dragging and a lot of lobbying trying to overturn that portion of the law.
Were you able to get that information?
On average workers per corporation, no. But what we were able to get is, say, for Kohl's Corporation, we looked at the CEO salary. And when I say salary, that's everything. That's their stock awards, which is the lion's share of it, but it's the complete compensation package. But anyways, we looked at the overall compensation for the CEO, Kevin Mansell, And then we got from the State Department of Workforce Development, what's the average pay of somebody who works at a department store? And it turned out that Mansell was making 415 times more than the typical worker. So we are able to compare CEOs to their industry groups, but right now there's no way to compare it to their actual corporation.
Mm. So, Carrie, how did that happen? How did it come to be that this person was making 415 times more than the average worker?
Well, we called Kohl's for comments. They opted not to answer any questions, as is true with most of the corporations that we call on this. Stock awards is the biggest thing. You have, up until, I believe, like the 70s or so, you were not giving stock options to CEOs.
Hmm.
And those stock options, and now they have stock awards, which are a little better linked to earnings, just can go up into the stratosphere very, very quickly. And that's when the gap really jumped. Back in the 80s, the gap was about 40 to 1. Now the gap nationally is anywhere between 200 to 1 and 350 to 1, depending on who you believe. And in Wisconsin, like I said, it's 100 to 1 when you take all CEOs. But if you just look at the top 10, it's 251 to 1. And also, by the way, for those national surveys, they don't look at all corporations. They look at the largest corporations, I think the 350 largest corporations in the country. And that's where the gap is the greatest. CEOs and their board of directors, and boards are also very well paid, argue that you have to pay this kind of money in order to attract the talent. That's, you know, everybody has their own opinion on that. I'd probably be willing to do it for a lot less, so who knows?
They haven't asked you, huh?
No, I haven't gotten the offer yet.
No, I would imagine. Yeah, some of these people on boards of directors, I wondered what those jobs were. Some of them are paying $200,000, you know, $250,000 to be on a board of directors?
Yeah, it's. We did a survey of that a few years ago, I think about 3-4 years ago, and we just concluded it is by far the best paid part-time job you can get. The average, I forget the exact numbers, but we had quite a few corporations up around 200,000. Very few would be less than 100,000. And then there's some pretty neat perks. You have corporations like Harley Davidson will give their CEOs a clothing allowance because...
No!
Yeah, I guess they figure the fees that they're paying them isn't enough to go out there and buy a Harley jacket.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, you see that in lots of corporations. Midwest Express, which of course is no more, they used to give them free flights. Briggs & Stratton, I believe they still do, but if they don't anymore, they did up until a year or so ago, would give you $10,000 worth of free merchandise. So you can. Their argument is, hey, this way you use our product and you can better understand our product. Others would argue, hey, with what they're paying you, you can buy the product.
I'd just be looking for a free lunch.
That wouldn't be bad either. Yeah, they do get those too when they have board meetings.
I'm sure they do. You quote Timothy Bartel, president, if that's how you pronounce it, president of the Center on Executive Compensation. It's a national advocacy group promoting the view of big corporations on pay raises. And let me say what you quoted. It's always becomes a greater issue in times of economic downturn. If CEO pay is linked to performance, and you could see that it's linked to performance, then most employees believe that their senior leadership is fairly paid. I'm not sure that's true. Do you think most people think that?
I couldn't find too many who would say that. And he acknowledged, we asked him, okay, do you have a study to back that up? And he did not. Yeah, I think if you went to most shop floors or most offices, and you said, hey, your CEO is making $3 million a year. You're making fairly high paid, 80 grand. Do you think that's a fair type margin? If the boss isn't around, I'd really be surprised to hear a whole lot of employees say, yes, the CEO is making the right amount. We should give them more. I mean, that's
right.
Just human nature. People don't praise their boss's pay.
Right. You know, it seems as though we've never had this discussion, and I'm wondering why we don't have it, because it does seem a matter of fairness for people who are working, you know, at least 8 hours a day, maybe more, putting in their time. To have that kind of disparity, you would think, would have an effect on the productivity of the workers. They'd be a little down, they'd be a little depressed, which would generate a conversation of what should the disparity be, how much is the CEO worth, what's a fair salary for everybody?
if you talk to some of the unions, most notably AFL-CIO, which has been a leader on this issue, they would argue that, yes, it does have a direct impact on morale, that when the boss is making that much more, employees do, it does impact their morale, and productivity could suffer on that. It's become, and like Bartel said, when you're in economic downturns, it gets talked about more, and it has become more of an issue in the past few years, both because the gap has gotten so large and because the economy is down. And the shareholders, a lot of times shareholders don't care if they're doing well. If they're not doing so hot, then they get upset. And the past few years, the market's back this year, but for a couple of years, obviously, it was god-awful.
Right.
And shareholders were acting up a little bit and were speaking out about this.
The wage gap, you quote Timothy Smeeding, a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, the wage gap is uniquely American. Did your study for this article bear that out?
Yeah, it's definitely great. I forget the numbers, but it's greater here than in other countries, other industrialized countries. I'm not sure if there's anybody to come up with a really good reason. I think it might be the stock option awards again, that is what really, really fuels a CEO's pay. And that's why we pointed out Whole Food Stores, they do have a limit on the disparity between the average worker and the CEO, but they only measure salary and bonuses. They don't count the stock awards, which is, I mean, that's where the action's at.
Hmm. Let's go to phone calls. Here's how you reach us, and I would imagine we'll have more than a few on this issue. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Kerry Spivak is our guest, and we're talking about his piece on the 10 best-paid executives in Wisconsin public companies. They saw their pay growth 31% on average in 2012, and the average worker was paid, on average, the CEOs were paid 251 times more than Joe average on the job last year, which is, really a huge amount of money. So what do you think about that? Why is it that this wage gap is so uniquely American? Should there be a law that says that the gap should not be that large? What does it do for productivity of workers? Maybe CEOs, and that's the market. I'm kind of out of that world, but maybe it's the market that you can't get a really good CEO to make a company grow and highly profitable unless you pay these huge numbers. There go the phones. We'll take your phone calls momentarily at 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Kerry Spivak, and let's start with Tom is joining us in Prairie du Chien. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One thing that always slayed me was these utility execs get paid over $1 million, and I often wonder how much talent it takes to run a monopoly.
That question comes up every time we do this. I mean, we do this story each year, just with different angles. But the question's always raised about the utility executives because it is a regulated industry. The salaries, particularly for Gail Clapp, yeah, he's up there. He's generally number two. And he was number two again, I believe, this year.
Mm-hmm.
He came in at about $13 million. And, yeah, they would defend, and they say that their stock price does, that their performance overall, including the stock price, is just as good as the unregulated utility companies, and that their companies are very large, so on and so forth. I can't really give you an opinion on whether or not they're worth it or not. But that is the argument, but there is always objections on that, saying, hey, it's one thing to run a company that's unregulated, that has to deal with everything, and the market has to attract customers, this and that and the other. But it's different when you have a utility which is regulated and you have a customer base just waiting there. But, yeah, that is something that comes up all the time, and you'll hear the opponents who citizens groups who will often raise objections to it. But the objections have not had a real impact on the salary for the utility executives because it continues to go up along with everybody else's.
Some of these salaries went up. This isn't necessarily true of the head of the Wisconsin Energy Corporation, but still, when you got a salary and compensation of $13 million, which is a heck of a lot of money, the percentage change you have in your statistics here was 15% over 2011. Mm-hmm. How do you get a 15% raise when you're already making, you know, a huge amount of money? What would be the basis of a raise for somebody like that?
Oh, the basis, okay, the form of it would be largely the stock awards and possibly bonus. But the basis, and this is another thing that comes up all the time, is corporations, both for the board members and for the top staff, the C officers, chief executive, chief operating, et cetera, they bring in the consulting groups. And the consulting groups come in and they do a study, and everybody always says we want to aim to be at the middle. But the consulting groups are always raising that middle, so it's kind of a self-perpetuating machine or beast where each year or every 3 years, whatever, you come in, hire a consultant, and they study the market and they start recommending increases, which is forever raising the bar. So that bar continually goes up and the board members are happy, and for the most part, the CEOs, I would imagine, are a pretty happy group.
Hmm. Don't you wonder in those meetings, though, Carrie, if nobody at the table doesn't say, wait a second, this is a huge amount of money. Don't we need to look at how much other people who are working for this corporation are making? It just seems like it's a natural question.
Board members, I'm not in board meetings.
Right, I know.
I'll ever be invited to one.
No, you probably won't.
But board members do say they do think about those things. That's the reason that Congress enacted the rule saying you must have the median and show the median income of your company. Now, shareholders are getting a greater voice on this too. Congress also ordered that companies have what's called a say on pay vote, which each year shareholders have to vote to say whether they approve or disapprove with the way the CEO pay is computed. And actually, in Wisconsin, you had a couple of companies, not last year but the year before, lost their vote. You've had several that came in at around 70%, which in the world of corporate democracy, 70% is really considered a defeat. Again, that the voices are going to be heard from the public for a portion of it, from the workers for somewhat a portion of it, but the biggest voice is the shareholders. And shareholders as a group, a lot depends on if they're doing well. But remember, when you talk about shareholders, you're also talking about a lot of people. You're talking about you and me, anybody who has a 401k
right.
or a pension, because that's invested too.
Yeah. Tom, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Scott in Whitewater. Hi, Scott.
Hi. My question for the guest is, has there been any correlation between, like, the number of positions that are on board and how many people actually hold those positions? I mean, are there 500 positions on board of these big companies, but it's only held by 80 people?
Well, when
so they're voting for each other's raises, because a lot of the members on the boards, I understand, are CEOs and CFOs of other companies.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you do always have the question about people on interlocking boards. That was a huge problem a number of years ago. The SEC has cracked down on that. Yeah, on boards, frequently you have CEOs from other corporations, and they try to make sure, and I'm not sure what the law is or if it's common practice, not to have CEOs from Corporation A set the salary for a CEO on Corporation B and then do a flip-flop. So I'm on your board, you're on my board, and we're both voting on these. We're both setting the CEO pay. Because you have a committee on each board that really does the heavy lifting on determining the CEO pay, and then they make a recommendation to the other board. But CEO boards of directors tend to be very well-to-do people. They are people from corporate America. You don't get too many guys from the shop floor who get onto the board of directors. So you have people in a different universe than many of the workers who are setting up the pay and who are making fantastic sums themselves.
Hmm.
So that probably plays a role in it, too. It's if I'm making $3 million a year and I'm setting a pay for a guy and giving him $5 million a year, that's not going to feel like quite as much money as if I'm making 70 or 80.
It's a whole different world, isn't it? I mean, it's a different universe, Carrie.
I sit in the press box or the bleachers to that universe. I'm not a member, but
right.
But it is, yeah, it is a whole different way of looking at life. Where you know, if you have that much money, it's you have a very nice view.
Yeah. Well, what's happened during? We're coming out of this somewhat, but during the rough years, the recessionary years, when a lot of people have been laid off, what's happened to CEOs' salaries during those times? Did they go down precipitously or not?
They went down a little bit. In 2010, the average pay in the state dropped by 8%. Dropped by 8. But in 2010, it went up by 27%. So it's been going up and down, but the increase does appear to have been greater than the decreases.
Mm-hmm. Scott, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Roger in Beaver Dam. Hi, Roger.
I just want to point out, I've been reading something on this subject in the last couple of years. In the military, from the chief officers to the lowest paid, the ratio is roughly 50 to 1. In other civilized countries, other countries in the world, the ratio of CEO or corporate head or company head to least paid employee is roughly this 50 to 1. The United States seems to be the only one that has this very broad discrepancy, and the theory that this is necessary to bring in people to be corporate heads, I think, is fallacious. The consulting firms he talks about, if you were at a consulting firm, would you come in with a recommendation that you lower anybody's salaries and you wouldn't have another job? So anyway, that's my point.
Yeah, very good point. I mean, then you said it better than I did. That is true with the consulting firms. They do not come in there and say, thanks for giving me this contract for $500,000.
Right.
And by the way, sir, you're overpaid.
Exactly. Right. That ain't going to happen. Who are these consulting firms? Where do they come from?
They're all over the country. Hewitt is one of the biggest ones, and that's in Chicagoland. Mercer's out in New York. They do more than just consult on CEO pay. They will consult on salary issues, employment issues, insurance issues, so on and so forth for corporations. And it's a very lucrative business. I mean, everything involved in CEO pay, everybody involved in CEO pay generally are very well compensated themselves, except for the reporters who write about it.
Thanks, Roger, very much. Well, you need to make sure you have your own consulting firm. You know, reporters need to unite and get a consulting firm to come in.
We'll see if we can set that. Then I got to get that invitation to a board meeting.
Okay. Right, right. Thanks, Roger, for the call. 800-486-8655. Mike in West Bend. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how are you doing today?
All right, how are you?
Great. Well, all things considering, that is. Again, I love the show. It's great. My comment basically is, in order to keep making the money that these companies are making, not only are they slashing employees, slashing benefits, slashing pay, which I know some people who just got let go very recently of the place I currently employ, and am employed at, and they're also raising their prices so that, you know, it's getting to be hard for the average American like me to afford doing things. I mean, I spend most of my time hanging out around my house because it's free. It's kind of sad. I used to be able to spend money, go out and have fun, but nowadays, just to fill my tank up to go for a drive, it costs me $60. You know, to get food somewhere, all that stuff, grocery shopping to feed my family. It's kind of sickening, but they're enjoying it because it's making them millions.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. The way that you can increase profits at a corporation, you got two ways of doing it: increasing your revenue and decreasing your costs. A big way of decreasing costs in many corporations. There's all kinds of things you can cut, but frequently it comes down to manpower. And we all know there's been huge layoffs in a variety of industries, and CEOs are rewarded for increasing those profits because they're paid by their shareholders. And unfortunately, a way that frequently they have to do it, no, I shouldn't say have to, frequently a way that they do it is by cutting payroll costs. It's just a hard, cold fact of life, and I understand what you're saying.
Mm, thanks, Mike. Carla in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to say that since corporations are granted many privileges under the government, and the government being buying for the people, that the government should be able to put limits on what they make. They should be able to have some government involvement because that's granted by the people, by the government. Thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the call, Carla.
I don't know if something like that could be done legally, but look at the reaction you've had just by Congress saying we want you to list the median pay of your average workers. The SEC has yet to give the enabling regulations on how to do it, and there's a big lobbying effort to prevent that from ever being enacted and to try to overturn it. So trying to have Congress, if it was even legal or feasible, and I don't know if it is, put in a real cap, boy, that'd be a hell of a story to cover.
Were any of these figures totally surprising to you, Carrie? Did you look at this and say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is the case? Either the salary or a corporation that you thought shouldn't be on the list of the top CEOs but was?
Maybe a few years ago when I was young and naive, but no, now it would not. One reason I focused on the top 10, because this was confusing to me, is I would always see the national studies say that it was 200-300. The CEOs were making 200-300 times more than the average worker, and we're always coming up in Wisconsin anywhere between 80 and 100, 110%, 110 times or whatever. And then I dug a little deeper, and I saw, okay, the national studies are not all corporations. It's only the largest corporations. That's why I decided, let's focus on the biggies in Wisconsin and see what the gap is when you look at the largest corporations. Like I said, for top 10, it's 251-1. If you go top 20, it was roughly the same number, a little bit less, but not greatly so.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for being with us. And I'm wondering, when you do a story like this, what it does to you. Do you get a little sad about everything?
I always refer to it as my annual reminder of just how poor I am.
I would imagine. That's comparatively speaking, though.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Carrie, very much for being with us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Carrie Spivak, he is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we'll put this piece on so you can see how poor you are. But it is all relative. But some of these salaries are just holy Toledo. So, and we'll put that on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We had hoped to have another guest to talk about this other kind of related story, but we can't find the guest, but we can still talk about the whole issue. This was from Deadspin.com, and it asked the question, is your state's highest paid employee a coach? The first sentence went like this. You may have heard that the highest paid employee, public employee, that is, in each state, is usually the football coach at the largest state school. This is actually a gross mischaracterization. Sometimes it is the basketball coach. Based on data drawn from media reports and state salary databases, the ranks of the highest paid active public employees include 27 football coaches, 13 basketball coaches, 1 hockey coach, and 10 dorks who aren't even in charge of a team. And it went on to talk about whether or not hard-earned taxpayer dollars are paying the coaches. The bulk of the coaching money, especially at the big football schools, is paid out of the revenue that the teams generate. The problem is that, they say three problems. Coaches don't generate revenue on their own. You could make the exact same case for student-athletes who actually play the game and score the points and fracture their legs. It can be tough to attribute this revenue directly to the performance of the head coach. And we're going to look at that issue and ask you, let's just have a conversation. I think that it's interesting to find out what we think people should be paid. And coaches are paid a huge amount of money. In some states, it was people who run medical schools. Let's see, in New Hampshire, the hockey coach is the highest paid public employee. There are four states in the country where a college president is the top paid public employee. There are five states where someone in the medical school, three deans, one chancellor, and one plastic surgeon is the highest paid public employee. One state where the law school dean is the top paid public employee. But get this, $5.2 million is the compensation, excluding bonuses, of Mack Brown, the University of Texas football coach. The salary of Texas Governor Rick Perry is $150,000. Unbelievable. So what do you think? What do you think about that, too? We're just going to open lines here on what is proper compensation on the heels of the conversation about the pay growth at the top and lack of pay growth and great disparity between those who are top executives of companies and people who work for them, or who the top paid public employees are, and they tend to be coaches. What does that say? What does it all say? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And let's go to Craig in Kleiman. Hi, Craig.
Hi. This comment has kind of ties in with your last guest and this subject also, but we seem to be very concerned about the corporate world's pay of their CEOs and stuff. But if you look, our athletes and our movie stars, that pay doesn't seem to upset people. Somebody making $25 million for making one movie or what Tiger Woods made in a year or something like that. But I don't really think we want the government to step in and start saying how much each person should make. That's leaning towards socialism again. But that is kind of a platform of the Democratic Party. You know, you have it, I should have it.
Well, except that the gap really has increased so much. And when you look at us compared to other countries, countries that aren't socialist countries, the gap is widening here in the United States to a point that we haven't seen for almost 100 years. So I think it's a valid question. How it got to be that way and whether or not it's fair. Don't you think that's a fair question?
Well, what fair, the marketplace should say what fair is. I mean, where else can somebody make $25 million for making one movie? I'm sure that other countries, their movie stars don't make that kind of money either, but it doesn't seem to upset us here about the athletes and the movie stars.
Yeah.
And,
I see your point. Yeah, I see your point. I think that there isn't as much outrage in that area, and it's a valid question to ask, why is that the case, that we're more upset about CEOs making more than athletes? I mean, athletes make an incredible amount of money, too, don't they? It's unbelievable.
Oh, unreal.
Yeah, it is.
What did they figure A-Rod made for every pitch last year? I don't know. It was thousands of dollars.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't think I'd be able to perform if I knew every pitch was worth that amount of money. Oh, I couldn't throw a bad one. Thanks, Craig, very much for the call. I think he makes an interesting point. Why don't we get as upset about athletes or movie stars, or even going back to the study that Carrie Spivak was writing? Let me find this part of the study. That we're not that upset when it comes to entrepreneurs either, when it comes to people like Steve Jobs or others, CEOs. Here it is. While the CEO-to-worker wage gap, he writes, is attracting a great deal of media and political attention, the public is generally much more forgiving toward entrepreneurs who strike it rich, sometimes reaping billions of dollars in profits for themselves. It's because people like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg put it all on the line when they launched their companies, while a public company CEO is generally hired by an established firm. That's interesting why there's that disparity, don't you think? Thank you, Craig, very much for your call. And let's go to Rick in Madison. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to talk about this. I think it's outrageous that we would pay a football coach especially one very close to home here, so much money when they don't have loyalty to the area, and they I think it's very arguable how much effect they have on the performance of the team relative to the players and the fan base, et cetera, and the scheduling as well. I mean, but I also want to. I also feel that we. You were saying that we value, you know, entrepreneurs and think that they should be compensated. Well, what about somebody who's putting it all on the line, working as a cashier at a grocery store? I mean, they're putting it all on the line. They're basically out there dealing with people all day long, doing physically wearing activity. They get paid $8 an hour. That's outrageous. And I think that, you know, we just have this bizarre vision in the world that some people we can take advantage of and they should be abused and paid as little as possible, but it's fine for someone to make billions of dollars for bad decisions and bad performance and actually move on to the next opportunity. I don't know. That's my opinion.
What do you think cashiers should be paid?
I think that anyone in this country should be paid a wage that they can. They don't have to basically take public assistance. How about that? I mean, any company that's hiring workers, that those workers then are subsidized for health care or food shares or anything else or housing because they're not being paid enough, I think is wrong. So I think it should be somewhere around $11 to $15 an hour. And I know people say that's crazy, but I don't think people can live on $8 an hour.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Rick, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. I want to tell you, and I'll have a little more to say about this at 10:58, that we are switching times for this show, and I know you've been a loyal, wonderful audience for 8 years. I'm not going anywhere. The show is just switching to a different time period, but it's been here for 8 years, which is a long time. We value your contribution to this program. I'll tell you more about how you can find out about other changes in a few minutes, but I wanted to ask you to make the change with us, please. 1 to 3, starting a week from today, okay? 1 to 3 is where you'll find a conversation with Kathleen Dunn. More about where you can find out about other changes in a little while. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to more phone calls. Tom in Rhinelander. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about the voting thing a little bit here. The fact of the matter is, you know, the athletes and the singers and everybody else are the very, very best in their game in the world at what they do, and we have demonstrative evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we vote on them. We either buy their hats or their shirts or we go to their games or whatever else. And we have a choice. They ignore them completely and they don't get anything from us, or to vote on them. You know, but the your guest made this comment that I think is one of the reasons we can't get to the heart of this matter, which is false. And that is that, oh yeah, we have stockholders who get to vote on these things. And it includes you and me. Baloney. Doesn't include you and me. It doesn't include you and me at all. Even if I have a 401k, I've got 500 stocks in there, and I'm not going to be able to attend the stockholder meeting. I never am going to get any voice in that corporation. The corporate votes are done by the board and the big people who own the big money. Guess who's your neighbor? Guess who's on your board, and you're on their board. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just crap that this is some kind of democracy, you know, in the corporate world. It's just not.
So,
and that's something we really got to get our arms around.
So what do you think should be done about it? And do you think most people would agree with you?
First of all, we ought to bust the myth, you know. We need to just talk honestly about how this really works. And it's all an intertwined system of the wealthy deciding what should be done for the wealthy. It's not anything else. You know, but we need to come to terms with that and talk honestly about it. We're afraid to talk about capitalism as is because somebody's going to attack us for being some kind of socialist or blah, blah, blah. You know, that's nonsense.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for your call. 800-486-8655. Our number, Brent in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Kind of just what he was just saying a little bit, that a lot of the boards are made up of millionaires, and if we actually saw what they actually paid in taxes, you'd be frightened, I mean, as far as the offshoring. And that has a lot to do with where our money isn't being collected. You know, they used to call it tax evasion, but they don't call it that anymore. But also just basic living wages, about $10 an hour for most people, and people that are...
Oops. Hello? I'm sorry. I'm sorry, we lost you. If you would please call back, because I was interested in what you were saying. Our number is 800-486-8655. John sends this email. The one statewide institution that would qualify as a corporation is the UW, where coaches in the sports programs make millions compared to the academic staff. Many with similar qualifications in their fields. Granted, the sports programs bring considerable revenue to the university, but it does show where the priorities are. Badgers men's basketball coach, $2.1 million a year. Incoming chancellor, $495,000 a year. Brings in a lot of money, this sports program, though, right? And what's amazing is not just Wisconsin, it's, you know, virtually every state in the country. The single highest paid public employee is usually a football coach. We're different. It's a basketball coach here. What do you think about all of that? Let's go next to Bob in Appleton. Hello, Bob.
Hi. My comment is to one of the recent callers who was wondering why we don't have the same objection to movie stars and sports figures making these high salaries. And for me personally, it's because the sports figures and movie stars aren't actively working to export jobs and bust unions and suppress wages like some notorious Koch brothers CEOs do, who will spend, you know, billions of dollars to influence elections even in Wisconsin to get candidates elected who will support that goal. And for some reason, I think they've successfully gotten people to blame their situation on the people below them rather than the people above them who have all the power, and it's resulted in the successful effort in this state to convince people that state workers had it too good while corporations and their executives didn't have it good enough. So I think that's a big part of why there's that resentment.
So what do you think needs to be done about this, Bob?
I think for basically to people to understand where the power is in this country and how it's affected middle class people, and the middle class has not lost ground because people below them or public workers are doing better than them. I think it's a matter of a politicalization to understand the power of the Koch brothers and the revolving door between politics and lobbyists. And that it's all working for the rich. And the rich are getting richer, not because they're great entrepreneurs or great successes in other ways, but because of a political imbalance of power here, particularly with Citizens United.
All right. Thanks, Bob, very much for your call. Let's go to Mark in Ashland. Hi, Mark.
Oh, very interesting show. I've been following it with real attention. It seems to me what is missing in the discussion is the history of fractional banking. This has happened since Babylon with every great civilization that has used fractional banking. When the wage discrepancy becomes so great between the rich and the poor, a fracture develops in the wheel, and it can, like it has before in 28 and other times in history, cuts to the center. The empire rises and the empire falls. It's a non-sustainable banking system, pure and simple, never has worked since Babylon. Every major empire that's tried it has ended up in ashes.
So what's the alternative, Mark?
The alternative? Well, I hate to talk about things like kindness and the golden rule and things like that, that our technology has bought us straight face-to-face. That's our choice.
All right. Thank you, Mark, very much for the call. Let's go to John in Footville. Hi, John.
Yeah, we simply, WPR and you, Kathleen Dunn, absolutely do not want to talk about Mad Dog Venal. capitalism. You just don't want to broach the subject at all. You'll go to great ends to tiptoe around that. But with all the greed and the avarice and so on, it's just the undoing of our entire system, and we blindly fall behind the elephant's tail, and we take what we get, but we don't want to get to the core of the problem. And as this goes on, this stealing, this purloining, and this criminal conduct will go on forever, long after this country has settled into the ashes.
All right, John. Thank you for your call. Let's go to David in Milwaukee. Hello, David.
Hello. This goes back to the election. I hope I got time to get this out, but I was going to vote for Mitt Romney. My brother, my oldest brother, went to college. I'm simply a truck driver. I've been a truck driver for 35 years, and my wages have gotten nowhere. I mean, I actually make less now than I made 5 years ago.
Oh.
But what I want to say is that my brother has been all around the world and works. He goes to a lot of corporations and deals with a lot of these CEOs. And he sat me down. And he said, look, he said, it's a total scam with these guys. Men, and I say men, mostly learn this in college. They follow this corporate blood trail their whole lives. They divvy up the profits, and the workers really are given last consideration to row the ship. He says, and my brother, believe me, he's been in these higher buildings, you know, the Trump-type Koch brother boys. And he said, look, it's a total scam. They surround themselves with people, make sure to surround themselves with people smarter than themselves to make them look good. And they divide up everything at the top. And it's really sad because they learned this early on. And my brother said, do not vote for Mitt Romney because he says, I've dealt with this man. He said, it's the workers are going to suffer. But I still ended up voting for Mitt Romney because I am a Republican. But what I'm saying is that, you know, when you really learn the truth about what goes on in these corporations, these people give a crap less about the people under them, and they it's all for them, period. And that's what it is. But that CEO is hired guns. And I've also worked for small businesses where it was a family-owned company, and there's a huge difference in that. These CEO guys are honed their whole lives to feel entitled. They're hired guns. And it's all crap. But now you take a family-owned business, that is a tad bit different. I've worked for both.
All right. Well, your wages shouldn't have gone down for the past 5 years either. That can make a person kind of unhappy. Thanks, David, very much for the call. Well, that was interesting. We don't talk about money very much, do we? I want to tell you that starting next Monday, and we were so into this time slot for such a long period of time that I don't want you to think that I'm leaving or anything. I'm not. Our show is moving to a different time period, and it's going to be unusual. It'll be something that we're looking forward to and we're greatly anticipating. Talk of the Nation is going off the air. Thursday is the last day for that show. So we are moving into that time slot, and it will start a week from today, Monday, July 1st. Our show is moving. Same people, Rhonda Fanning, extraordinary producer, KP Whaley, who is new, who's joined our production team, will all be moving 1 to 3 in the afternoons, and it starts next Monday. We have All Things Political that will still be Mondays, but it will be at 1 o'clock. And we will have what I think is a vital part of this program, and that's you. You are the heart of this program. Guests say that all the time. I heartily agree. Your intelligent and interesting calls will be a vital part of our show. So please come along with us. Make the change starting next week, and it will be 1 to 3 in the afternoon starting next Monday. There are other changes taking place on the network, so we invite you to go to WPR.org. That's WPR.org to see our new schedule in some detail. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning, and thanks to KP Whaley for producing this show. Thanks for all of your calls, everybody. We'll be with you mañana. Oh, I'm sorry. I still have a minute. I was so concerned about it. I can keep talking. So we'll be with you tomorrow, and there are great conversations ahead here, of course, on the Ideas Network. We'll be looking at, I'm sure one of the days this week during our 9 o'clock hour, we'll be looking at Supreme Court decisions, and we have breaking news to respond to each day of this week, so that is coming up. We'll be following the Supreme Court decisions, of course, very closely. And just a reminder, because I probably you get in a certain habit, just a reminder that NPR did cancel Talk of the Nation. Their final show is Thursday. I'm sorry to see that show go, but we are very excited to move to that time slot and continue our conversations with you. It all starts a week from today, July 1st. Okay, until tomorrow.